A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tailford, joined by James Dowse.
Hi, Scott.
And Josh Brown.
Oi, oi.
Hello. Now, we thought we would do a conversation about the idea of this best 6 out of 10 games. Now, this, I think everyone knows what this is once it starts getting described, because all of us played games over the years that maybe aren't 5-star games, maybe aren't super opulent, maybe didn't have incredible budgets or whatever, but they had charm. And there's something about these games, and I'm going to reel off a whole bunch of them, because we put a little bucket together of all the games that we think kind of fit the idea of what we're going for, and then I want to pick apart this idea that sometimes a good 6 out of 10 game is better than a 5-star product. Now, we'll see how we go, whether you agree or not. I'll read out some stuff, and we'll try and narrow this thing down, because I think charm and ambition can sometimes be better than refined, synthetic stuff.
I think you might be onto something there, and before we started recording, you know, I said these are games that we all like because they have a charm. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't necessarily recommend to other people, but then, when we started going through the list, we were all like,
recommend
hell
every
no,
single one.
I'm going to recommend every single one of these games.
So there will be some in the wrestling world, as they say, pops to some of these, because Doritos Crash Course is number one.
Baby.
We'll revisit some of these things. So I'll run down a few things. So you've got Doritos Crash Course, you've got X2 Wolverine's Revenge, you've got Cold Fear, you've got Judge Dredd, Dredd versus Death. Yes, you've got Clive Barker's Jericho. You've got the Simpsons trilogy of Road Rage, Simpsons Skateboarding, and Simpsons Wrestling. You've got the Die Hard trilogy. You've got Buzz Lightyear of Star Command. You've got the Scorpion King game.
Yeah, you
let's
do.
Say.
Fantastic.
You've got the Watchmen game, The End Is Nigh. You've got Disney's Hercules. You've got A Bug's Life, Sherlock Holmes, Crimes and Punishments, MK versus DC Universe, Werewolf the Apocalypse, Youngblood, Plants versus Zombies, Garden Warfare, Homefront the Revolution, Condemned 2, Bloodshot, and the original Amazing Spider-Man game.
Holy moly.
I'll tell you this. There's only one game there that I take umbrage with, and that's Doritos Crash Course.
As in
a 9 out of 10 game.
20 out of 10, Josh.
20 out of 10. Sorry, I was wrong.
There's rarely a metric that can contain Doritos Crash Course. Now, I haven't played Doritos Crash Course, but the through line for all these games is that they tried something that, for whatever reason, worked with us to the degree where it gets that reaction where it's like, oh my god, you have that connection with the game. And we're going to get into another dimension to this, which I think comes from franchise titles, expectations that are maybe not met, but then you kind of get a relationship to that entry in a well-known franchise anyway. For example, Resident Evil 6, which I know Mr. JB is a fan of.
Hell,
I don't even mind RE6 these days. And things like The Sinking City, which is more sort of like well-produced game. There's the likes of Hitman Absolution, which aren't held up as the best entries in their respective franchises, but they have that attempt at something. Mm-hmm. And that sort of lets you build that connection. But to go back to the 6 out of 10 stuff, what do you guys think? I don't know, just where do you want to take it? What is it about these games?
Half an hour of Doritos Crash Course is all we need to talk about it. What a game.
What is it about Doritos Crash Course?
Anything about it?
No, I know what it is, right, but I've never played it.
It is a total wipeout.
Yes.
The game, basically.
Yes.
But it was a
tie-in.
Okay. Sure.
You know.
There was a tie-in with Doritos where they made that and a game called Harm's Way. I'm 99% sure. And it was just Doritos making games left, right, and center, and they were all good. They were outstanding.
They had some secret sauce, which is weird because I don't really like their chips. But when it comes to that game in particular, you know, the time trials in Crash Bandicoot, you know, like the original Crash Bandicoot games where you have to do the levels as fast as you can. Uh-huh. I got that same vibe from Doritos Crash Course. It was kind of set up in a way where you're just trying to beat these obstacles in as quick a time as you possibly can. And I normally don't care about high scores. Like, I'm not going to rerun a level just to get a high score. But me and my brother had such a rivalry over getting the high score on the Doritos Crash Course that it became like a thing. I must have played almost hundreds of hours of that game because I just needed to perfect the steps. Like, I needed to get everything perfect, as I'm sure James Dowse knows, to complete that course without making a mistake.
Well, the thing is with this, right, because wasn't Doritos Crash Course one of the games that came on Xbox? It was one of the first Avatar games.
Yes.
Where you could use your fake Miis or whatever the hell they called them. And it's like, it didn't have any expectation. Like, there was that whole idea that Xbox was rebranding, they were taking like lessons from Nintendo or whatever. But that, in nearly all of these games' cases, worked in their favor. Like, no one was expecting Simpsons Wrestling. Totally. And that worked in its favor. And Simpsons Wrestling is dog if you play it now. Unless you have the charm that we do, you don't give me a side eye, James.
I'm giving you a side eye.
If I give Simpsons Wrestling to anyone right now, they would run away.
Right. Well,
they wouldn't get it.
Are we fully moving on to the Simpsons right now?
We're just doing all of it at once, man.
Okay. Because
whatever you need.
The thing with the Simpsons trilogy, as I love that you coined that. Simpsons
Road Rage, skateboarding, and wrestling.
The bad trilogy.
No, I would also want to clarify that we haven't mentioned Hit and Run, not because we don't think that's a great game, but because that's a genuinely good game.
Yeah, that is a genuinely. That's the one. 9 out of 10.
Yeah, that's the one people consider genuinely good, whereas the Simpsons trilogy varies in quality. Now, I'm a huge fan of skateboarding. I'm a huge fan of road rage.
Yes.
Wrestling, though, can suck my bum.
At the time, you were into it.
I wasn't, not even at the time. This is the thing which I was interested to talk about with you guys. Even when I was a kid, I did not like Simpsons Wrestling. I thought control like ass.
Really?
I just didn't think I was a wrestling fan when I was younger, and I was just thinking, why is this not working as I wanted to work? Why is everyone getting whacked over the head with a skateboard and stuff? I didn't like
The animation in The Simpsons Wrestling is terrible. It feels like a bunch of like weird vertices come to life. Like, it's just polygonal in a bad way. And like, I'm sure Barney was OP because you could just burp everywhere.
Yeah.
And his burps did like poison damage all the time. So it wasn't balanced. It didn't run very well. The animations were terrible. But it had charm. There was something in there.
All the games had were like sound bites from the characters just on repeat, on repeat, on repeat. Like I was saying to Josh Brown just before this, Simpsons Skateboarding, all they used to say was 50-50 grand the entire time. Back in Brooklyn, that's all they said over and over again. It's just ingrained in my mind now.
So when I'm reading these games out, and obviously we put this list together before we started recording, what feelings come back to you guys? Does it make you want to play them again, or does it give you that nostalgia? Like, it's like, oh my god, I'm like X2 Wolverine's Revenge.
Yeah.
I played a stupid amount of that, and it was not that good. Like, but in another sort of like thing that's worth talking about, you know, if you're not stuck under the corporate studio thing where everything has to be mirror sheened and put into a certain game mold, Sony, you can try other things. And in X2's Wolverine's Revenge, that game's combat system where you could take on three dudes at once or do a counter that where you attack a guy in front of you and backflip and hit a guy behind you, that had a cool idea, like a cool premise. That's what stands out to me that does stand the test of time, that would make me want to try it again.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said that, you know, whilst some people might look at this list of games and say, oh, it's just nostalgia talking, we played a lot of games as a kid, and not all of them stuck in the same way that these did. And I think all of them, you know, did something rather than just being in the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. Like, when we were talking about, you know, Douse there was talking about, you know, the 50-50 grind and stuff, and hearing those sound effects. Sometimes, I don't know if this is just me being a crazy person, but I'll watch part of a long play of an old video game just to hear the sound effects again, because it takes me back, and that's what that Simpsons skateboarding.
You won't listen to game music, but you'll put the sound effects on.
I do that as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's good, because the game music doesn't hit me in the same way that the sound effects do, and I don't know why that is, because maybe it's the repetition of just hearing it and having the kind of Pavlovian response to, you know, you do well, so then someone shouts out the score or something like that. I'm not sure, but when it comes to those Simpsons games especially, I would play the crap out of Road Rage, especially today, because I thought that was a lot of fun.
See, I only ever played the Game Boy Advance version of that.
How was that?
Which was, you know, it was a game. But on the PS2, I had Hit and Run. Hit and Run. And on the Game Boy, I had Road Rage. And Road Rage was good, but it wasn't Hit and Run, though, was it?
See, for growing up as a Crazy Taxi fan, I didn't play Road Rage. I played skateboarding and I played Simpsons Wrestling. Because I was just like that's all these games were just what's working at the time. We'll do our version of it.
Yeah. That's what I was about to say. You know, when it comes to Road Rage, when it comes to even Hit and Run, which is just like, we'll do a GTA in the Simpsons universe. Yeah. You know, obviously skateboarding, Tony Hawk's was massive at the time. Yeah. For me, like, these games are just, like, less good imitators of other good games I liked. So I was well into Tony Hawk's when I was younger, which meant I was well into Simpsons skateboarding, you know? Yeah. You're into, like, Grand Theft Auto, you want a bit of that Mayhem or Crazy Taxi. In Road Rage, it's like, they don't get there, no. but they aspire to be a game that you like, which also helps, I think. And that's why I didn't like wrestling.
Right.
Because when it came to Simpsons wrestling, it didn't have that analog that I enjoyed already, you know what I mean? I was into SmackDown versus Raw and stuff, which played much differently. And I think that's kind of why that one stands out, because it wasn't already tapping into something that I already enjoyed.
I wonder how much, like, you know, because obviously, like you said, we've played a whole bunch of games over the years. Obviously, technology has advanced so much. And, like, the whole idea of, like, so many of these things are licensed tie-ins. Either they were made to tie into a TV show. I mean, you bought a PS2 to play, what was the title, the Sopranos game or whatever.
Yes.
It was.
Yeah,
would kind of be one of these.
That would be one of these.
That you enjoyed in the new era, even though it was made back in the day. And, like, I played the 24 tie-in game. And it's like, but now, you know, like, so many different games have gotten so much better in terms of average feel. Wow.
Did you enjoy the Lost game?
I, at the time, really did like the Lost game, but it was only because I was seeing the people from the show in a controllable thing. That's what I was going to say, because I wonder just how much of the love of these things is just, we like X thing on TV or film, and then we get to play it in some form, and that's enough. Like, the Rugrats game did the rounds for a while back in the day, and it was just because it was something playable. Toy Story 2 is a phenomenal game. That's a higher than a 6 out of 10.
Yeah.
But Toy Story 2 game, like, massively worked because it was a controllable version of something that you already saw, and you just don't get them anymore because, like, now, like, to turn a game around in the same time frame, it's just so rare. Like, you don't get the movie tie-ins unless they're a mobile game. Like, that's super, super rare. So, like, I guess, like, what do you think of that? Like, is that where the appeal came from or still comes from?
Definitely, and I think that it's such a tragedy that middle ground has sort of fallen out. Now, if you get, like, a tie-in game to a, you know, a popular TV show or even a popular film sometimes, it's always like a Facebook game or it's a mobile game. Yeah. And sometimes they could be fine, but it's not like what you used to get with, you know, we got 2 Buffy the Vampire Slayer games and they were all right.
The Alias game's brilliant.
Exactly. Yeah. They were all these 6 out of 10 games that, they wouldn't have set the world on fire and they probably weren't worth full price, but they had an impact on people and they had an impact on you. And if you're a fan of the show, I mean, we were talking about this morning in the wind-up. Because we recorded these on the same day. We had a bank holiday.
It's true.
But we were talking about,
Happy Easter, everyone.
Thank you. Wanting to jump into a kind of title in totality. You know, you want to engross yourself in a project. You want to play all the games. You want to watch the movies they're tied in with. And I think that definitely gets you when you're younger. You know, if I'm watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer, hell yeah, I want to play the Buffy the Vampire Slayer games. I want to read the comic books. I want to do all that stuff. You want to consume it on a multimedia level in those games, hit that itch. And maybe it's because I'm just older, but in a way that the Facebook games and the mobile games just don't hit anymore.
Yeah.
I've just realized that all of the things that you've just said now, they are Facebook. They're also Fortnite.
That's true.
Uncharted is in Fortnite. Uh-huh. Like, you could play as Tom Holland, Spider-Man, Fortnite. Everything is in Fortnite.
Oi, you have touched on a great point there because, you want to, you're enjoying a current movie. The tie-in is going to be in Fortnite. Yeah. It's going to be in Call of Duty.
Sad state of affairs.
I know. Call of Duty Warzone is going to get,
Godzilla and Kong.
Godzilla and Kong. You know, you've got the Ghostface Killer from Scream. You know, you've got these weird mishmashes. And I think Terminator Dark Fate was everywhere. Yeah. That didn't have its own game.
But it was in Gears of War.
But it was in Gears of War. It was all over the place.
Is that just a sad state of affairs in regards to the average budget allocation, that the best this studio, any licensing studio can do, is put it in something else? Yeah. Because that just is a safer return than doing a one-off Terminator again.
I remember my friends bought the Ghostbusters skin in Fortnite and that was like a tenner.
Yeah.
And that was 2 people.
Yeah.
20 that's quid for that.
Trying to crank out what's the most we can charge for in this limited window of speciality or specialty or whatever.
Yeah.
To try and get as much out of it. James Dowse, you nominated Buzz Lightyear of Star Command. What is it about?
I don't think I did.
Maybe it was James Brown. Maybe it was James Brown.
That was James Brown.
James Brown. James Brown popped in. He loves the Buzz Lightyear.
I've heard. Big, big fan.
I mean, he's a big fan. But
Buzz Lightyear Star Command.
Yeah. We also mentioned Bug's Life, which is the massive thing. But either one.
Both are great. But you mentioned Toy Story 2 earlier, and that is the genuinely good Toy Story-themed game. But Buzz Lightyear of Star Command was just weird,
it was
man. It was a strange game.
Did you play, very quickly, did you play Toy Story on the PC where it was it was like Virtual Springfield, but it would be classed as first person, but you were in Andy's room and you could play with the toys and you could do a little mini games and you could do that little shaker thing, the red thing with the shaker and the little nozzles. little turning nozzles.
Etch-a-sketch.
Right. And it was like all them things, nozzles, were in the bedroom, and it was Toy Story. No?
Never played that.
I was so young, and it was a thing. And anyway, you were going to actually say words
you,
there.
In school, did you guys ever play that game on the computer where you had to keep a skeleton alive for a day?
Yes,
That was weird. I think that like gave me psychological trauma for life. Yeah. Like you had to keep
it alive. It's already dead.
Well, this is the gimmick. You have to make sure it like has food and water.
How
if I recall.
Have you remembered that?
Because it's haunted me for years,
That's
man.
That's a memory.
If anyone knows the name of that game, please tell me, because I can vividly picture it in my mind.
My one was Toy Story Activity Center.
Is that what it was? Toy Story Activity Center.
Yeah, from 1998,
as a side note, did you ever play Sonic, like, school or whatever it was? It was basically that, where you just walked around Sonic's school.
Educational stuff. Sonic school.
Anyway, carry on.
Doing physical education all day long.
I can't remember where we were. Buzz Lightyear, Starman.
Buzz Lightyear, Bugs Life, Die Hard Trilogy.
Oh, that's it. All those, because they're all PS1, right? Mm-hmm. Unless I'm misremembering. Like, a lot of those PS1 games where they're just so rudimentary. But they worked.
I don't know if there's something in here that translates into my love of indie games. Like, I don't need everything to be big, opulent, crazy stuff. I can, like Slipstream. I'm loving Slipstream, and that's a throwback to old school Outrun, you know, like 90s arcade races, like on the dawn of 3D, like all the blast processing stuff that went alongside all the Mega Drive Genesis stuff. Slipstream is a love letter to the way that those racing games used to work. And that does one thing, but it does it really, really well. And so I can get a nice amount of time out of that. I don't need an 80-hour opulent 5-star thing, Horizon Forbidden West or whatever. Like, I don't need them all the time. Like, they're great every now and then, but like, why not? Like, for me, I'm always like, why not take those budgets and make 10 games, 10 smaller games? Give me 10 Rockstar games, give me 10 Naughty Dog games. Like, that's way more preferable. Give me 10 more things like this. Lord of the Rings, The Third Age. Give me those things.
Yeah, I fully agree. You know, you mentioned going back to The Sopranos recently, but that was part of the joy. It wasn't just the pop of, you know, being able to say I was playing Sopranos Road to Respect. It was knowing that it was going to be a 5-hour tops experience.
Right.
And you just kind of consume like these weird one-offs, like you said, wouldn't happen now. And it's not just because they wouldn't happen now, but it was like a variety of things at the time. And yeah, a lot of these things were definitely overpriced when they first came out, like no doubt about it. But when you got them in the bargain bin, which I did for almost all of these titles, like I didn't get X-Men to Wolverine's Revenge for years because I would just rent it over and over again. Then I eventually got it when it went down in price at GameStation or whatever. But like when you get those games cheaper and you can smash through them, like I have such fun memories of going to GameStation and I think it was, you know, sometimes like £3 for £10 or something. And you just kind of load up and then you play those for the next few weeks and you have your like middle tier games. Well, they're a lot of fun.
Even rentals as like a thing. Like, I mean, like if you rented games when you were younger, there was just probably a specific place that you used to go to and that was like a staple part of how you or your gamer diet, like how you experience more and more games. That's obviously just gone away because you don't use digital rentals. Game Pass is kind of, in terms of getting access to a wider library, that's kind of Game Pass. But that is another thing that just kind of went away. Mr. James Dowse, you did nominate Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare.
What a game that was. Outstanding game. Did you play the iOS game much?
Did not. Tell me more.
I know nothing about Plants vs. Zombies my wife played it back when I first met her. Okay. And I was like, I don't know what this is. It was a mobile game, so I ran the other way.
It was just tower defense, was it not?
I have a unopened copy of Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare that I've had for 10 years. I got it off a friend. I hope you don't listen to this because I didn't open it and didn't even play it once. So sorry about that. Please tell me about what I'm been missing, please.
Right. So basically, it was a 2D tower defense game on the iPhone, and then it came to a third person shooter by EA. And I can't recommend it enough. It's so good. There was two sequels after that. There was Garden Warfare 2 and Battle for the Neighborhood or something like that.
Because that was that weird pivot that they did where it was like, obviously, like you said, they're tower defense games. They're like 2D, they're nicely animated. I forget the name of the dude who created it. Mm-hmm. And then it was PopCap or whatever wanted to do, or EA wanted to do more, like franchise it out, do more games. And he was like, this is way bigger and more forced than I ever wanted it to be. I'm going to leave.
Yeah.
And then EA went, okay, let's just do as much as possible and just like rode it into the ground.
Well, they worked. They were good.
Right, okay.
The first one anyway. But it was very much just a well-made shooter. Which had no excuse to be that good. No excuse at all.
I heard people talking about it, but I guess like the love of the originals kind of carries over anyway. Yeah. Like they were smaller releases at the time. One thing I was going to mention is that kind of general feeling of like franchise tie-ins. Like you see something in the cinema or the TV or whatever, you go home, you play it. There's something about controlling what you've just seen, like mm-hmm. that we don't have anymore. Like, I feel like now, like some of the bigger titles, or some of the bigger studios are trying to bring that stuff back, but just the sheer reality of how long it takes to make a big opulent video game, like kind of breaks that connection again. Like, we're getting a new Indiana Jones, but like, when was Indiana Jones' last movie? It was like 2007 or something.
That's it. And even, you know, odds on that the new Indiana Jones, I'm pretty sure they've already confirmed, actually, the new Indiana Jones game, it's going to be a brand new original story. It's not going to tie into the movie. Like, it might release around the same time to, you know, capitalize off that. But even the kind of franchise tie-ins that we get now, for better, for the most part, I think, are just, you know, entirely their own thing.
Yeah.
Like, famously, the Batman Arkham Asylum, like that was going to be a Dark Knight game tie-in that got canned.
Batman Begins game is really good.
Arkham Asylum, Batman Begins game is quite good. I think that might even be on the list.
6 out of 10. But I didn't put it on the list, but it is now on the list.
Yeah. But now that's kind of morphed into, if you see something at the movies, you're going to get something kind of similar to it. You're going to get Square Enix's The Avengers, which is kind of like the MCU, but not.
They're so late though with that.
Totally. Yeah. I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm just like talking about, like, this is kind of how it's changed. Even that, which is so trying to be the MCU, doesn't go all the way and properly tie in with it. Same with Guardians of the Galaxy, Marvel's Spider-Man, obviously, you know, that was entirely acclaimed for its creating its own universe, but we don't get those direct tie-ins. We just kind of get adjacent
tie-ins. Thing I couldn't believe, I think I said this to you, Dallas, is like, how did Sega not have a Sonic game ready to go? You could have turned it around so easily, turned the levels from the movie, turned the movie scenes into levels, let you play as the sprite that looks like the movie version. Like, it's just weird. Like, I mean, I ended up buying another copy of Sonic 2 because I was like, I want to play this somehow. So I bought the Sega Ages version on the Switch, but it's like, that's a really easy tie-in that doesn't feel like they did. Whereas if you go back to the amount of stuff that we're mentioning here, these are all, or a lot of them are movie tie-ins. And it's almost like that's what helps build the nostalgia or the general like admiration or whatever of these things. Like Disney's Hercules. You saw the movie, you loved it. You played the game, you loved it. Like, it's not hard to nail those things.
And I think it's, you know, impressive that these teams, given the time frame and the presumably limited budgets that they had, managed to make something interesting, because it's not just the fact, I think, that you're playing a version of something you've just seen. That obviously plays into it, but, you know, I don't think fondly of the X-Men 3 game. You know, I played that, but that thing just, that sucks out, right?
But the movie didn't do well, which kind of hampered it.
True, but I also...
Because the Bamfin stuff as Nightcrawler was cool.
That was cool, but you couldn't choose to be Nightcrawler all the time, which was a nightmare. And X-Men Legends did the teleporting even better. Mm-hmm. I didn't think about that, though. I liked X-Men 3 when I was a kid.
Right.
So that didn't hamper my enjoyment or hype for the game, but maybe that's it as well. Maybe if the movie is bad and we just don't have that connection to it, maybe the tie-in games we view worse?
Because the thing is, like, obviously we're going into like licensed stuff territory, but the overall like angle here, like in terms of, like, there's something about a 6 out of 10 game, and it's like, I was going to put Mad Max on, but I think that's better than 6 out of 10. But in terms of the way that game was reviewed, it was a lot of 6 out of 10s. It was very formulaic, but like, it was trying something in terms of the way that game is visually stunning, and like, the combat's really good, and it's like, sometimes something can excel even if it is a little bit naff. Like, it's just, there's something to that weirdness that stands out anyway. Whereas for Horizon Forbidden West, like, I keep mentioning that game, but it's a really good example of, like, everyone should love that game. Like, Elden Ring or the original Souls, Dark Souls, have rough edges, and they're more loved because of it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we've talked a lot about older games, licensed games and stuff, where nostalgia definitely plays a part in, but I think that hasn't changed today. Like you said, you know, there are still all of these games coming out that we gravitate towards, even though they've got 6 out of 10s in their reviews. You know, I think I had the Sinking City down. The H.P. Lovecraft inspired detective game that, you know, didn't get good reviews, but you know when something's just kind of your interest and you think, well, the people don't like it, but it's got enough elements in there that I want to see what it's about, and then you give it a go, then somehow you're having like a really good time. I like it when you kind of can bypass the reviews almost, and like, because reviews are great, you know, obviously we review games and stuff, I read reviews, you know, they help me inform my decision, but no one knows you more than you know you. Yeah. So just because something got a 6 out of 10, something got a 5 out of 10, if you're reading that review or you're looking at that synopsis and you're thinking, this has elements of something I want to experience, if you can, you know, afford to take that gamble, like, always take the gamble, always play a few hours of it, because you might get these, like, hidden gems, or they might not be 10 out of 10 experiences, but they have that nugget of charm, that nugget appeal.
I knew I was going to love whacking people in half as a werewolf in Werewolf the Apocalypse Earthblood. So I like that. I mean, £30 to be honest, a bit much for that. But I did enjoy whacking people in half as a big old werewolf. So it's like it depends what appeals. But I think like yeah, it's interesting drilling down on this stuff considering how much the industry is like big opulent games over and over and over again. And I think actually this stuff in theory ties into the way that Xbox are approaching stuff, where they're just sort of like here's Game Pass, here's a big chunk of titles. Don't worry about this one all eggs in this basket type release. Here's a bunch of stuff and enjoy it. I guess that's another thing to pick apart. Do you like that approach to the industry overall? As opposed to like, we're so far down gaming history, things should be big and glossy and over the top and whatever.
Oh, God.
All eyes on you,
solve the industry, James Dowse.
What a question. What a question.
Solve it right now.
Well, I was actually thinking, this is a somewhat of a side tangent with Xbox buying Activision. They were the ones who made half of these movie tie-in games. Yeah. Like, they made the Spider-Man 2 game. They made, I'm fairly certain they made Simpsons Hit and Run, didn't they?
That
or was it EA slash
EA,
Activision?
One, perhaps.
I'm fairly certain it was like a mix between the two.
I think that was EA, but the point still stands. They made
it
a lot. They made
interactive.
Like, right, yeah.
Well, that was a lie for me. That must
well, yeah.
But either way, like all of these games, I would love it if Xbox somehow figured out a way to bring all these licensed games back onto Games Pass.
That's
that would
thing.
Solve everything.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, not to cut you off, but in addition, that's the thing. All these games are going away because all we said this in the wind-up this morning, but all the like monthly service things that are being offered, Nintendo Switch Online, Game Pass, and the PlayStation Plus stuff, they can't account for the licenses, whether it be song stuff or just whatever timed thing they had at the time when something came out. And like it's a great part of gaming history. Like we have a whole bunch of reference for a lot of these games, and it's like it's a shame that there's no way to access them again.
That's it, because even at the time, you know, there was a big thing about licensed games, even in the early 2010s, where people were just like, go away, we don't want you. And that was true. You know, there was a lot of crap that people were getting swindled into buying, like the Thor video game or whatever, you know, like a lot of really dire stuff. But at the same time, I feel like we wish too hard for them to go away, because now they really have gone away to the point where they haven't been archived in the same way that something like, you know, the older Metal Gear Solids or Crash Bandicoots have.
Didn't Alan Wake get taken down because of copyright music?
And yeah,
they resold it.
Yeah, well,
but then they resold it. So it's just
they had to re-record it. Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. For games like Alan Wake, which you know people, other developers love, you know, like Remedy loves Alan Wake. They're going to want to spend the time and effort to make sure to fight for that game to make sure it doesn't go away. But when you get like these kind of like almost shovelware games, you know, the developers might not even be around. No one's going to care about them in the same way. And that is disappointing.
Is there such a weird, twisted irony to this that like these games were very much made to be a one and done, very much made to tie in with a movie, to have their 15 minutes of fame, like maybe for a month or something? I mean, I don't know how many of these we actually finished. When I think about these games, I don't think of their end credits. I think of when I played them, some of the first levels, some of the whatever, for the few hours that I played them. But the weird, dark irony is that we value these things more than those companies ever did. Not the studios who made them necessarily, but like we're the ones going like, oh my God, I'd love to get hands on Judge Dredd. Dread versus Death again.
Yeah.
Then that's never going to happen.
Oh, absolutely. Like the movie studios who were, you know, green lighting these things, making those deals, absolutely viewed these gaming tie ins, especially in the mid 2000s, early 2000s, as the equivalent of like having their toys in a Happy Meal. You know, it's just kind of like one business thing where it's disposable, like you said. In
just
the,
a box to tick, really.
Exactly. A box to tick. It was no long term thought about viewing them as art or whatever, you know, documenting them. And I think even for games that have a lot of creative spirit behind them, the Scott Pilgrim versus the World game, for instance, like that was delisted for so long because Ubisoft just didn't want to figure out the rights to get it back on sale. And then a remastered version finally came out after years and years of, you know, people kind of clamoring for it. And that's just like one example. That happens to so many games, and not all of them have the fan kind of base to bring them back. So if you want to go out and play X-Men 2 Wolverine's Revenge, you have to go get a PlayStation 2.
It's quite telling that, like, because you played the Spider-Man game, but you have to go and get a PS2 and like get like an HD upscaler thing and do that. And like, there's a bunch of games that I've played that are only on my N64 until Nintendo announced that they were going to put the Switch Online stuff. And then I was like, I've just wasted £100 getting my N64. But to some degree, there's still going to be hidden gems on N64 that are 6 out of 10 games. Yeah. You know, that like you're going to have to go and get the console to play. And it's almost one of those archivist style things where they should just be available. But like, I just feel like there's a real like value to these games that like, it's just, they're only going to be forgotten about in an industry that only focuses on the biggest, most opulent, over the top stuff. And that's a shame.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Game Pass earlier. And I do think that's helping a lot. You know, one of the first things that I did when I got the Xbox Series X was go in and download a bunch of games that I either didn't play or I had a lot of fun memories for. So I got like Skate 3, you know, I got like Brothers in Arms Hell's Highway and stuff. And Brothers in Arms Hell's Highway is probably like a 6, 7 out of 10, but I managed to be able to replay it at incredibly cheap cost, very accessible, upscaled, you know, auto HDR and all that stuff. It's like, that should be the way forward. I know you can't do that for all the licensed games because that is too complicated, but there are so many kind of underrated titles from the PlayStation 4 era, the Xbox 360 era, all the way back to the PlayStation 1 era that could be easily available, part of these franchises that shouldn't be totally forgotten. And it's not just a nostalgia kick. It's not just me trying to relive my youth. It's
I have a question. Do you think if, like, I mean, it doesn't have to be someone who has, like, AAA expectations alongside them, like an Ubisoft or an Activision or whatever, but it could be them. Do you think if any game studio brought something out that was as refined in scope as these games were, like one set of mechanics that's done really, really well. So it's like what the indie scene does now, which is why I love it so much. But if you has, because you get the EA originals, you get like Joseph Farah's doing his thing. And it's like, do you think if we got ostensibly a PS1, a PS2 game now, would that sell? Or like does an audience, does the average gamer just go, that's fundamentally outdated? I think you'd have, if you fix the graphics, if you just made something look quite nice. I mean, I know that when Ninja Theory made Hellblade, their whole mission statement was, we want to make a AAA looking game on an indie budget. And it's like, is the only thing that we need to care about to punch through to the mainstream graphics? Or is it like gameplay and longevity and replicating something for 30 hours in an open world game and whatever? Because I think if bigger studios did more stuff like this, it would still go down well. And it's like, and you can point to stuff like a Hellblade, in that, not sorry, gameplay wise, but like in terms of the production budget.
I think the distinction that needs to be made and what the publishers need to take on board is the scaling cost. I don't think you can deliver those games and charge 70 quid for them like Sony might if they were a first part. You know what I mean? I think Hellblade was definitely it wasn't full price, right? Like that was...
I don't think so.
It's some discount, you know, maybe $40 or something. Mm-hmm. You look at Kena Bridge of Spirits, which is kind of like a PlayStation 2 game with really fancy graphics.
I remember people saying that as a negative.
Yeah.
Oh, it reminds me of PS2 platformers. One of the best platformers ever, is it?
One of the best
I'll swear on microphone.
Best what?
Jack and Daxter.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like, you know what I mean? The Dax came out at £30 or whatever it was. Like, I think...
Gorgeous game.
I think as long as they're not charging premium price for them, you're not charging the same as an Elden Ring or a Horizon or whatever, I think you can get away with it. It's just a lot of publishers, especially big publishers, you know, like Activision, EA and stuff, they are getting there, but they're very unwilling to move on that price point. If anything, they want to knock it up.
Because it was funny when there was like that rumor came out about Sony / Naughty Dog remaking The Last of Us, and it was like, well, they greenlit that because while Neil Druckmann and Holly Gross and the people who made Last of Us 2 decide what Naughty Dog's next big thing is, all that personnel are just waiting. So, oh, you might as well go and remake The Last of Us 2. Let that wing of Naughty Dog do a new thing.
Yeah.
Like, just that, like, that's that side of gaming that I miss. And like I said, it's why I gravitate towards the indie stuff. It's why I love the likes of the EA Originals or the Ubi Art stuff. There are little incentive, a little projects put together to sort of incentivize originality and creativity. And as much as these are licensed titles, or some of them are, has charm, creativity, had original ideas, things that weren't bled out a million times, like a Dying Light 2 or whatever it is, where it's the same idea over and over again. James Dow's thoughts?
Can I, as a side little note, yes. Going back to about games that like don't exist anymore, like you can't get them anywhere, what you're saying.
Yeah.
I was looking yesterday at a game called Fairy Tail Fights that I used to play on Xbox when I was much younger. And I went on YouTube, 10,000 views was the highest viewed video. You can't buy it because that studio dissolved and just disappeared. Mm-hmm. And like, as you were saying with all these games that you just can't buy anymore and just lost in the ether, I think that's just going to happen to half of this list. You're never going to see any of these games again.
Marcus Jericho is not coming back.
Yeah, the people who made them don't exist anymore. So like, you're never going to see any of these games.
It sucks because, you know, like you can say you can go out and buy a secondhand PlayStation 2, you can buy a memory card, you can buy the controller, you can plug it in, you can get the adapter, you can try to track the games down. But sometimes you track the games down and they're like £40.
Yeah.
And who's going to pay £40 for backyard wrestling or whatever it is? You know what I mean? I want to relive my youth, but not for £40.
I think
I
spent about £30 getting ECW Hardcore Revolution. Because that was one of the early wrestling games where you put someone through a table. And I was like, I want to do that. I want to get access to these unique gameplay mechanics.
Is this unfortunately why emulators exist?
Yeah, I think
that's like the weird, that's just never talked about though. That like people love these games, and if you want to, like right now, well obviously after work, we're at work, after work, you want to go and play Aladdin, like eventually Disney put that on the Switch, but it was really overpriced and ridiculous. But if you want to go play The Lion King or Aladdin or Hercules or whatever, you can do that on a PC in like 10 minutes. Yeah. Like, and I'm going to be doing that on my Steam Deck, but like it's not massively legal, but it's like the only way to do this stuff. Yeah. Like that's like, it does like serve, that's one of the only ways they can serve that market. But I feel like with an aging demographic, 25 plus or whatever, they have all these reference points that aren't available anymore. And it's just a weird way that the industry has gone, even though I get it. I get the push towards more professional looking games or whatever it is. But I miss the 6 out of 10 games.
It's just, I think, you know, especially back in the day, you know, late 90s, late 80s, even the early 2000s, I just think a lot of the companies just kind of sold them as toys. And you don't keep toys, you throw toys away. And that was such a short-sighted thing that has, you know, screwed us over all these decades later, where they're just kind of in a landfill somewhere. And it's like, that blows.
Mm-hmm. I remember getting home from watching Cars at the cinema. Cars. Fantastic film.
Cars 3, great game.
Was it?
Yeah. Okay. It's got drifting in it.
Well,
Burnout.
Yeah, sure. When I got home, there it was, Cars for the PS2.
Yes.
And that just entertained whatever your old me, 10-year-old me, for months.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was it. You know, going to see the first Fantastic Four movie, being a kid, so thinking it was good, coming back to play the Fantastic Four game, not going to church because you, like, literally skiving church so I could get up and play the Fantastic Four game instead.
Sinning.
Yeah.
He's God would have wanted.
Season 5.
Sinning for an at best 3 out of 10 game. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I forget where I said this now because I've been in front of lots of microphones today, but I've been playing Sonic Forces because I need to play something after Sonic 2. It's just that feeling of like, it's that exact feeling of just, and I know that it's more of a licensed thing that you need to tie into that energy that you both of you are describing. But that was the thing that I couldn't believe Sega didn't capitalize on that. But overall, it's just that idea of more games. There, I feel like we played a bigger variety of game mechanics back in the day. And like that was more ideas being greenlit, and it was less about the big, the word AAA didn't, it wasn't even a thing. As a designation of a game, it wasn't a thing. And I feel like the overall amount of creativity in the space was applied to things like this. They got in front of people a bit more. Maybe they were tied to a movie or whatever they were. And I think that's replicated in the indie space now. But and obviously the indie space has come a long way. But like, there's something about this period in time. And it's not that there's not newer examples, like The Sinking City or like The Medium or Hitman Absolution or whatever. But there's, like I said, there's something about that 6 out of 10 game. And they happen to be licensed ones, a lot of them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think overall, I will always cherish the 6 out of 10 game.
Yeah.
Always, and I even cherish them now. You know, I remember getting back into sort of indies and stuff, like you said. And for me, what is that game? Shadow Warrior. You know, like
Shadow Warrior 3. Shadow Warrior.
Yeah. It did. I'm excited to play it. But I remember getting Shadow Warrior 1 and thinking, like, this isn't AAA. It's a little bit rough, but it's aspiring to be AAA.
Right.
You know what I mean? In a really earnest way. And they had something with that game, you know. It was essentially trying to do what Doom did before Doom properly came back in, you know, 2016 and was like, he's an old school shooter. Mm-hmm. Like, this was like, he's an old school shooter by a bunch of people who clearly really enjoyed those. And it didn't quite get there. I think it's probably better than 6 out of 10, but it's probably not better than 7, maybe.
I would say that's a good 6 out of 10 game.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
But the, like, it had like the thing that you wanted. It tapped into something that we gamers hadn't had for a long time, and it delivered on it. And I think that's what a lot of... we're missing now. You know, someone seeing a gap in the market, someone seeing a niche and being able to capitalize on it in a way that these daft games did.
Well, like that Pray for the Gods game that I mentioned so much, like that is a perfect 6 out of 10 game. It's not very refined, but it has charm and ambition and like a bunch of cool mechanics. What if Dark Souls met Shadow of the Colossus? Like there are cool things there with, like, you know, bits of Breath of the Wild in there too.
We seem to have forgotten about the entire Lego games because they were all tie-ins and they were all... in my eyes, good, but I know to some people will be rubbish.
I think they skew like a 7 or an 8 for what they're going for. But, I mean, what was the Lego Racer or Lego Kart Racer or something? The one you build your own carts?
Lego Low?
Yeah.
There was something, Lego. There was some... there was millions.
Like, yeah, there was the big kart racer boom in the 2000s, and Lego got in there too, and I remember being able to build your own kart. Yeah. That was cool.
Honestly, even that is kind of like the beginning of the Fortnite-ification of licensed things, because it's almost like you can have the thing you want, but it's going to be packaged in another form. It's going to have to be inside another brand like Lego, like Fortnite or whatever. So that's why I actually didn't play many of the Lego games, because I was thinking, I want, you know, to play these movies, these TV shows, whatever, but I don't want to play Lego. Like, you know, I'm not a fan of Lego.
We also gave it the right... it is called Lego Racers, 1999.
There you go. Yeah.
Back in today. Lego was a different beast back then. Yeah. Like all the Lego City Undercover stuff, and like they're now a licensing behemoth, as is evident by the new Skywalker saga and everything.
I remember as well The Incredibles being a game. Yes. I remember the PS2 version of that, and I always wondered what they'd do for The Incredibles 2 if they'd do a tie-in. Lego. It was just a Lego game.
See, that's such a shame as well, because The Incredibles is such a great base for a video game. You know, all the power sets are there. I mean, the first tie-in was all right.
It was great.
It was really difficult.
Did you play that, Scott?
Which one's that?
The Incredibles.
No, I didn't. I don't like The Incredibles.
Though. Oh, you silly goose.
I didn't think it was that good.
You silly goose.
I just couldn't. I just too busy watching Lord of the Rings, man.
There was a level where Dash had to run to school and you ran.
It was great, man.
Is it like Sonic in 3D? Because that sounds like Sonic in 3D.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, they're just the Fantastic Four. So you had the Fantastic Four's moveset on games, but it's like the basis is there to make something interesting. Yeah. And like you said, you know, they just decided not to and bet safe and have the Lego version. Yeah. It's like, that's probably good. It's probably a good game, but it's not new. It's not
first
something else.
Half of The Incredibles incredible. Second half, not that good. The Full Metal Jacket of Pixar movies, I would say. We should end, though, on something you mentioned, Mr. Josh Brown, the Scorpion King game.
Hell yeah!
What's that about?
Oh, man. Honestly, all the Mummy games are kind of these exact what we're talking about, like these 6 out of 10 all right things.
Playing as Imhotep, doing a big jaw thing, sucking up stuff. Yeah. It's great.
Honestly, man, the first Mummy game plays like just ass. Yeah. It's not good whatsoever.
If Kirby was a real person, he'd be Imhotep.
Yeah?
Yeah, with a big dislocate the jaw. Mm-hmm. suck it all up.
Yeah.
Carry on.
It's Kirby.
That's why,
that's why they've never done it.
Untrustworthy. Yeah, you wouldn't like to see that. But the Scorpion King game was about as good as the Scorpion King movie. 2 6 out of 10 products that kind of have something about them, man. Yeah. Whether it's Dwayne Johnson.
Is his voice in it? Like, really?
I honestly wouldn't like to say. it's early enough in his career that he might have been able to get him. Because I think that was his first, like, starring role, right?
His first big one. He'd done, like, Walking Tall and Welcome to the Jungle. And
had he already done that by then?
Maybe Scorpion King was his first thing. Ah, yeah, you might be right.
I know playing the actual Scorpion King and the Mummy was his first thing, but I can't remember about the spin-off. But anyway, the spin-off was, like, a third-person, you know, action game. And it was just a lot of fun. I just have such fun memories of it. Like you said, you know, going around, like, it was a game that I would take around friends' houses. To show them. Like, that's how impressed with the Scorpion King I was. And I think a lot of those, like, kind of bog-standard third-person action games, if you put, like, a little flourish of violence in there, like, some interesting locations, which they obviously have because they could just pull them from the movie, like, you can get something cool and worthwhile out of that.
I think that, and that's the thing, this is an ongoing conversation, because I wonder if you gave a kid that game, if you gave them, like, The Sopranos, or something that's really primitive in regards to where we are now, if you literally think of it as evolution over time, would they get it? Would they have fun with it? Or would they be like, this sucks, Dad. I want to play Fortnite where it's the animations are smooth and everything looks nice.
I mean, I'll tell you what. If you give a child, even back then, The Sopranos Road to Respect, I don't think they would appreciate it. You've got a video game adaptation of a TV show where it's about a mobster going to therapy. Like, that's just so many degrees.
If you need to swap it for 24, you swap it for 24. I'm just saying that there's a level of appeal.
I think you're right there, though. I think, you know, like, the ones we're talking about today have a very specific appeal, but I do not doubt, because we have mentioned some of them, that there are going to be equivalents for people who are growing up right now to be able to look back on and think, man, that weird Sinking City game that I played when I was younger really got me into H.P. Lovecraft-style horror, really got me into horror in general. Like, I think a lot of these games are actually just touchstones for interest in a subject or a genre or something else. It's like your first entry point into it, and they're good enough to facilitate that and give you something that isn't in the gaming space otherwise.
And I will always take flawed ambition over boring, pristine box ticking. I'll always say that. Give me a million Die Hard trilogies. Is all I'm saying.
A million
Die Hard trilogies, or all this Simpsons trilogy.
That's 3 million Die Hard, Scott.
That game was a driving game, a first person shooter lightning.
Would you rather not play as Mr. Die Hard in Fortnite?
Mr. Hard himself. Maybe it depends what you can. No, because I've got to. Then I've got to do. I was thinking I want to be John McClane, but then I was like, well, I've got to do a battle royale thing, innit?
Well, here's the thing. He was in Call of Duty Warzone. The Nakatomi Plaza was in Call of Duty Warzone.
His face wasn't in there.
That's very true.
Looked nothing like him.
But I mean, that's like Dow said, that's your option now. Die Hard in the future.
I will buy a PS1 and buy Die Hard Trilogy before you see me playing any Fortnite or Call of Duty with those.
I'll see you on the bus, Scott.
For now, though, this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by James Dowse.
Thank you, boys. Thanks
and Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah. And we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Doritos Crash Course?
Doritos Crash Course. What a game.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.